This is Mike Dot with the Relax Back UK show on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. On the Relax Back UK show, we explore all kinds of health topics, so keep listening and enjoy the ride. Hello and thank you for joining me, Mike Dilk, with this week's Relax Back UK show. This show is made possible by the kind sponsorship of AlgoCells. AlgoCells uses the body's own stem cells' ability to regenerate tissue to treat joint and spine injuries and pain. Check out their website, AlgoCells.com. This week, I talked to someone whose life was turned upside down by horrible pain caused by poor posture from working long hours at their computer. What he found as a way of treating the problem and care also turned out to be a new career for him.
I was working as a project manager in IT, and I kept getting promoted, and I was working on a laptop, which will sound very familiar to a lot of people, and eventually it made me ill. And so the sort of stuff that made me better really excited me, and I found I was better suited and enjoyed that a lot more than I did being working in IT as a project manager, so I switched over to it.
James Crowe helps people be comfy and efficient in the workplace and is an Alexander Technique teacher. Hear his story and how he helps people now. Then, it's the time of year when some of us might bore others about their summer holidays. Well, you know what? I'm no exception. And I went to Italy and had a great time and bumped into some interesting people in Florence.
So what are we doing? We are we're helping pigeons. We are going out when we can with our bicycles, and sometimes we take our little guy here, who is also a pigeon. We call him Mavi.
Hear about the pigeon helpers of Florence and other bits from my holiday, but don't worry, I'll be brief. So please do join me for a great show. Thank you.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at AlgaCells know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. AlgaCells. Part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. AlgaCells. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
My guest James Crowe does an awful lot, but essentially he tries to keep people in the workplace stay comfortable and effective and efficient. I started off by trying to summarise exactly what it is that he does.
He is a posture expert. He's into posture. He can teach Alexander Technique. He's the kind of go-to guy if you've got aches and pains and you're worried about how you're sitting or how you're doing all kinds of stuff. So does that kind of summarize what you get up to, James? Have I given you a fair introduction?
Yeah, I guess you have. You know, a lot of our listeners at the moment, some of them will be sitting, and I help people with how they sit, particularly if they get in pain. Some of them will be pottering around the kitchen doing all sorts of stuff. I help them become more aware of how they're doing the things that they're doing. So I bring them more mindful awareness of their bodies. And then some of them will be working, and I help people work more comfortably and without pain as well. So they can be a bit more productive and a bit happier at the end of the day.
Right. So and what made you start this? I've got a suspicion you were kind of getting along with your life quite nicely. You had quite a good job, lots of responsibility and lots of stress. And then all of a sudden, you were like one of your potential clients just now.
Yeah, totally. I was working as a project manager in IT, and I kept getting promoted, and I was working on a laptop, which will sound very familiar to a lot of people. And eventually it made me ill. And so the sort of stuff that made me better really excited me. And I found I was better suited and enjoyed that a lot more than I did being working in IT as a project manager. So I switched over to it. And you'll see that a lot in therapists and other modalities, you know, yoga teachers, Pilates teachers, that they get into something because they need it, because they're imperfect, and then they enjoy it so much that they decide that they'd rather do that as a career.
So what was your first port of call, though, when you kind of you were at the end of your tether and you were in the high octane world of a very busy project manager? Did you kind of get hold of your GP?
Yeah, I was very well paid at the time. So I took the plunge and traveled down to Harley Street to see a specialist in work-related upper limb disorders, or RSIs, arm pain, computer arm pain. And he took a look at me and he said, oh, you know, his notes said, oh, James is a very nice man with a forward jutting chin, which at the time I thought was really weird. But I see later on that was part of my problem. And he wrote me a big list.
Do you need a forward jutting chin as a project manager? Because you've got to stick your chin into people's business.
It didn't do me any favours. I think like a frog, I was trying to put my throat closer to people as I croaked at them what they needed to do before the end of the day. And he gave me a really big list of modalities, of different therapies to try, different things to try. There was osteopathy, there was needling, there was sports massage, right? There was quite a lot of things, and I tried all of them. And
is needling acupuncture?
Acupuncture, yeah. So I work quite closely with physiotherapists, and when they use needles, they tend not to call it acupuncture, so they will call it dry needling or needling.
All right.
So they don't get confused with other people who do acupuncture primarily. So yes, acupuncture.
Okay.
And right at the bottom of the list was Alexander technique. And he gave me a beady look and he said to me, this is the one that will work for you. But I'd never heard of this, Mike. And so, you know, being a self-assured young man that I was, I completely ignored him and worked my way down the list one at a time with varying degrees of success, but no resolution really to my arm pain. I could mitigate it, but it wouldn't go away. And eventually I came to Alexander Technique, and what I realized was the reason I was having arm pain was me. You know, it was my environment and how I was interfacing with it. And if I changed those, if I held my posture better, if I changed my environment so it was easier to work better, then the pain receded. And it did take quite a long time. We talk about Alexander Technique teachers. They teach a process or a technique to people, and I was particularly slow in learning it, and repetitive strain injuries and work-related upper limb disorders do tend to be quite intransigent. They take a while to resolve. So I stuck with it and became fascinated by the whole process and thought, wow, this is much more interesting than sitting on people's desks waiting for them to update a spreadsheet, and so went off to do it, and the rest is history.
Okay, so from the kind of first visit to the Alexander Technique practitioner or teacher to when you kind of felt much better, how long was that? Like a couple of weeks, couple of years,
no,
couple of months?
No, it was definitely a period of time. I think it was probably 3 or 4 months looking back at it.
All right.
So I was going for weekly and sometimes twice weekly sessions with an Alexander Technique teacher who was also a GP. And I think looking back, that was probably the only reason I actually went was being quite close-minded. I wasn't willing to try things that I wasn't already convinced would work for me. But the fact that it was a GP who was helping me was allowed me to take it on board.
You felt the fact that they were a GP gave them a bit more oomph behind them, as it were, a bit more horsepower in what they were saying.
Legitimacy.
Yeah, legitimacy. That's exactly the right word.
Yeah, a bit more legitimacy. Yeah, a bit more horsepower, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But even so 2 or 3 months compared to a lifelong in pain, is nothing, is it? You know, it really is nothing. It's a blink of an eye.
Yeah, absolutely. It's right. It's I don't know. I guess I meet a lot of people who have pain, and some people are always going to have pain. That they are always going to have pain, and they're going to learn to live to deal with it. But I meet some people who you can get them out of their fix relatively quickly, and all they need is pretty much a dispassionate third party assessment of what's going on, rather than, you know, an outside look of saying, well, you know, you're saying that your working practices are perfectly fine, but I've just had a look through a camera at you, and you're hunched over a laptop, and you positioned yourself like a scrunched up prawn over a tiny little screen, and it's no wonder that you've got back and neck ache, or, you know, you've got these chronic pains. So yeah, some things do take time to fix, you know. It takes time. The damage that we incur by using ourselves badly and having bad posture doesn't just occur immediately. It takes a long time and builds up.
Yeah.
And it can take time to unravel that as well.
I see the number of times I've heard, oh, but I just bent down to tie my shoelace up, I think, and that's what caused it. And I think, well, actually, yeah, it might have been the straw that broke the camel's back, but it'll be the years of doing whatever you're doing before that actually probably really caused it.
Yeah, that career as a professional shoelace tire might have had something to do with it.
I'm going to pick your brains about Alexander technique in detail. But first of all, I just want to mention stress, because your job as a project manager, I can imagine it. You were under a fair amount of stress. So do you think that was part of the problem? And in the people that you see, do you kind of see that as been a real, well, one of the issues, one of the causes, really?
Yeah, definitely. Stress, but I kind of see it as a cycle, Mike. Stress causes tension. Tension causes pain. Pain causes stress and tension. And you can get locked in that cycle. And unless you can step out of it, it tends to swallow you up.
So I mean, you can give lots of people lots of great advice about posture, but I can imagine it's slightly harder if you see someone who's obviously stressed, and it might be their job, it, you know, it could be their family life, it could be anything. That's probably kind of harder to do something about, give advice about. I mean, do you try and get involved in that side of things? Do you say, look, you need to calm down? Although that's probably the worst thing ever to say to someone.
I shout at them. I say, just, you know, an aeroplane isn't going to crash into this room right now. You relax. And
if that doesn't work, you just doesn't work. Have a stick and sort of hit them a bit.
So Alexander Technique sessions, or lessons as it's often called, are very, very relaxing. And people who go to things like massage or Alexander or reflexology or any of these other modalities will notice that after a while they gain a relationship with their practitioner, and they like to offload their daily problems. So we're not trained counsellors, but it is quite a nice outlet for people to discuss the problems of that they're having day to day. And that, in a nice relaxed environment where you're unwinding people's muscular stress, does tend to help people release stress. So I have a little, I'm not going to swear, but I have a little analogy that I say to people, which is, when you learn the Alexander technique, SHT tends to matter less. And it really does, because one of the things we're doing is we're undoing the neck and shoulder tension that so many people have. And in doing so, we're taking people out of that fight or flight pattern, that stress response that tends to tighten up our neck and shoulders. So when you release that tension, things do matter less. You know, you're less on edge, you're less stressed.
Okay, so we've got to the point where you learned the Alexander technique and realized it worked for you. Then you became a teacher, a practitioner. How did that happen? Because presumably that didn't happen overnight. That wasn't like an online course for an afternoon, was it?
No, it wasn't 2 hours and a certificate, a PDF straight afterwards. It was a 3-year training course in wonderful Kendal in northwest England. It was absolutely beautiful there in the summer and autumn and spring, and absolutely horrendous in the winter. As a town, it's quite a tourist town as well, so Kendal empties in the winter. So not only is it bleak and black with horizontal rain, but there's no one there either. But we had a, I had a lovely 3 years learning the Alexander technique. Met some fantastic people at the
full-time study. 3 years full-time.
It's classed as full-time, but frankly, it's as close to part-time as it could be. So I think it was, you know, somewhere in the region of 20 to 25 hours a week, something like that.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly.
All right.
But yes, it was, I think a couple of people managed to hold down jobs and take their training, but the majority of people who go on to train to be Alexander teachers need to take 2 or 3 years out to do it.
Okay, so this is quite a commitment.
Yeah, so it's a massive commitment, and I don't know, Mike, like life's an adventure, and it's really, it's becoming more and more popular now for people to change roles and change careers, and it used to be very, you know, you become a cobbler and you'd be a cobbler for the rest of your life, or nowadays people do like to change around a bit, and I've always been acutely conscious of the passage of time. I think partly because my own brain doesn't tend to register it in the short term, so all of a sudden I'll realize that 5 or 10 years have passed and I haven't seen it happen, and right. So I do like to make the big jumps and say, right, okay, well, I've been X, you know, I was a nightclub manager for many years and I did that, or I've been a computer help desk person, or I've been a project manager and I've been a therapist, and no doubt, and now I'm an ergonomist, and no doubt sometime before I retire, I'll be something else. I don't know, a space pilot, or a balloonist, or a professional shoelace tire, whatever it is, whatever takes my fancy.
No, all right. I must say, I do like that kind of approach. But back to the Alexander technique. If I was to come to you, all right, with a pain in the neck or whatever it might be, what actually happens? You know, first time we meet, oh, help me, James, I've got an awful pain in the neck. What happens next?
Yeah, so what I like to do is I like to do a sort of 10 to 15 minute stage show demonstrating bad posture to people. And then I regret that immediately afterwards, because demonstrating bad posture can often lead to discomfort and pain. And then I will guide the individual through. Generally, we start on lying on a table, like a physio's couch or a massage couch. Very gently, I use my hands to undo the tension in the head, neck and shoulders, in the back, and then throughout the joints, through the rest of the body. So basically unwinding people and unraveling them a bit. And then as they become more proficient at allowing me to do that, so I ask them not to help because they would be using their own ideas of posture and tension. I ask them not to help. When they get better at that, then we start to take it into movements, little activities, while staying posturally aware and not adding tension into the activities. We do simple things at first, moving a finger, moving a hand, and then we build up to more complex activities, sitting, standing, walking, catching, typing, so that you're posturally aware of yourself while you go throughout your day. And for people, I get quite a lot of nurses and counsellors and other therapists as well, who care for other people for a living. And I teach them to be aware of themselves whilst they're helping other people, which is really, really useful, because a lot of carers will focus 100% on the person they're trying to look after, mm-hmm. often at the expense of themselves. So we bring that back into balance. Did that answer your question?
Certainly. And so we've already talked about how long this might take. Well, in your particular case, it took 2 to 3 months. Is that fairly typical?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so when I meet people, I have them join me for a series of 6 sessions after an introduction. And I do that because I want to have the time to work with people without each session having to be particularly special. So what we do is we work generally weekly, and it gives me time to build some momentum in their self-awareness and in their releasing of their tension. And then most of my clients go on and they take 3, 4, sometimes longer sets of these 6. So for a lot of people, it's sort of 20-ish, 24 sessions. But I have clients who I've been seeing, you know, since I started 15, 20 odd years ago, and I see them once a month or so. They feel better. It's nice to catch up with them, and we have a good chat. So there's that element to it too. Yeah, but really, right. I'm focused on, I just want people to get better. My whole life is about, I don't want people to feel like I felt. And if I can achieve that, then it's job done. I'm not there to see everybody once a week for the rest of their lives. I just want them to learn what they're doing wrong that's causing them pain, and then send them skipping and clapping off into the distance as the sun shines.
Or even dancing.
Even dancing, yeah. Just not. I don't do the dancing because even though I work with body awareness, Mike, I still can't dance. So it doesn't help with that.
Oh, I don't believe that for a second. I'm sure you.
Some people it helps with.
All right. So, I mean, you came into this through having a bad back, through a bad neck and bad arms, through a desk-based sort of job.
Yeah.
And most of the people that you help sort of come to you with a similar sort of story. You know, I've got real trouble at work. Most of my work is sitting down.
It's not just that. I mean, a lot of musicians, I see a lot of musicians, and let's face it, not every musician is making a living as a musician. So, you know, they get a lot of, there's a lot of repetitive movements involved in being a musician.
Yeah.
And if you're making those repetitive movements with excess tension or badly, guess what? It's going to end up hurting. So,
and actually, a lot of instruments are very awkward. They're very sort of lopsided. I'm thinking, like, I don't know, the flute or something. You know,
it's, or a violin or something like that. Anything where it's off to one side, and often you're having to tilt your head, and so it's kind of like all our positions are slightly compromised. But the best we can do is make them as least compromised as possible. It's a bit like all exercise is a bit bad for you, but it's also good for you. It's, you know, you just do your best within the constraints available to you.
Right. So you kind of specialize in helping people in their workplace. Often that's sitting down. But
yeah.
Alexander Technique in general presumably could help, you know, people doing all kinds of different things. I'm thinking maybe driving, actually. Lots of people hate driving.
Yeah. So, for our listeners now, when you next get into your car, you might want to think about your headrest behind you. If you settle right back into your chair and kind of push your back up into the chair, so I call it slumping upwards. So you're slumping back into your car chair, and then adjust your headrest so it's in the right place, and have your head, the back of your head, resting against that headrest. When you've done that, adjust your car mirror so that it's in the right place. And then every time you find yourself driving badly because you've slumped forwards due to stress or tiredness, or you still haven't unlearnt from craning forwards that you did when you were learning to drive, you'll realize, because your mirror will be in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
So then you come back into a nice posture and you can make some quick, easy wins that way.
Yeah.
Driving, I really wouldn't want to drive for a living eight to 10 hours a day. It's a very static, sustained posture. And those are real risk factors ergonomically for having pain and discomfort and injury.
I've got to say, I find driving very uncomfortable. Partly, I'm a bit of a funny shape, so I'm not crazily tall, but I'm 6 foot tall, but I've got quite short legs. In fact, my wife calls me low bottom, so I've got a long body. So almost in any car, my head hits the roof, so I'm kind of crouching.
What a curse. Yeah. Well, don't buy an Aston Martin like one of my clients did and had to sell it after 3 or 4 weeks because they just couldn't fit in it. It was a very expensive mistake, that one.
Yeah. Actually, doing what you do, you can have a bit of a sideline in secondhand sports cars, possibly, because you must see a lot of people with the midlife crisis. Sports car, no, that won't do. Sell the car to me.
Give the car to me. I'll have the midlife crisis and I'll look after the car. It makes sense. It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Back to how you help people rather than how you steal their cars. Is most of what you do face-to-face? Because what you've described so far, you described meeting people. But, I mean, we just had COVID. Presumably that had to change. How do you help people now?
Yeah, so I do online work. We have online Alexander Technique sessions. We do mainly now it's in-person Alexander Technique sessions. And when I was less busy, I used to do group workshops for places like the University of Manchester and the BBC and other big organisations. But the real strongest benefit to the work is in one-to-one with an Alexander Technique teacher. Here in the UK, we have a registered society, other societies are available, called the Society of Alexander Technique Teachers, or STAT. And they have a website, alexandertechnique.co.uk, where people can find local Alexander Technique teachers to work with them one-to-one, and that's where the most benefit is. Then I also work with people. Let me tell you, when COVID happened, I've been working with a lot of people one-to-one, and sometimes I'd be confused about why all the good work I was doing was being undone within the last couple of weeks before I saw them again. And we shifted to online, and we shifted to Zoom and other online platforms. And all of a sudden, I got to see inside their houses, and I'd see people working. And the clouds broke and the sunshine through. I thought, here is what's going wrong. And I just saw how badly people were working. And even with the best intentions, and, you know, you might have the most expensive ergonomic chair, but it's very easy to sit badly and use yourself badly on an ergonomic chair. People doing all those bad postural stuff that's causing them pain. So I retrained as an ergonomist as well. And now I help companies whose staff have pain. I help a lot of solopreneurs and individuals. Those sort of people who work for themselves now, the gig economy, I think you'd call it, mm-hmm. who just work from home. And of course, the difference between home and the office is, in an office, there's a legal responsibility for ensuring that your staff are okay. And whilst the same is true in home offices, that really isn't rolling out very well. And a lot of people who work for themselves just want to get the work done. And they know that they could be set up better, and they could have, when we say ergonomics, I mean your desk, your screen, your keyboard, your mouse, your chair. How are they all fitting together? And most importantly, how are you fitting into that? So what I do now a lot on remote ergonomic assessments. And when I say ergonomic, I hope people understand what that means, because a lot of people still haven't.
Explain what it means to you.
So there are a million different definitions. What it means to me is how I fit myself to the environment and how I fit my environment to me. So you could go to the gym, you could work out for 2 hours a day, do everything that you wanted to try and improve your posture and have massage and, you know, have physiotherapy and chiropractic and osteopathy. And then you could go back and sit at your home office desk, scrunched over a laptop that isn't at the right height, without the right keyboard and mouse, on a bad chair, because you've never got round to improving it. And your posture and your pain are going to suffer no matter what you do externally to that. So there's an overlap between having the time to look after yourself and making sure you sort out your environment as well. And I like to do, there's three parts to it. There's the body. Can you look after your body? There's the brain. Can you take breaks? Can you stagger your work properly? Can you task rotate? Can you look after your eyesight? Can you keep your stress low? And then there's your space, the ergonomic environment around you. Is it configured right for you? Because one size does not fit all. Most office venues will have a chair that they've chosen for their staff. And often it's chosen on, does it suit the color scheme for the office? Is it within the right price band? It's going to fit some people. But the vast majority of people, it's not perfectly configured for. So you need ergonomic chairs. You need stuff that's adjustable in height. You can adjust the back. You can adjust your armrest. And you can, for people with shorter legs but tall backs, you need a chair with a tall back but a shallow seat. You know, and buying a plus size chair is going to leave you sitting badly because your thighs are too short.
Yeah, actually, it always surprises me when I go into offices. I don't know if surprise is the right word, amuses me. You quite often you see a chair, and there's a big sign on the back, sellotape to it. This chair belongs to, do not touch, do not adjust any of the things by any means. So sometimes I think by having chairs that you can adjust everything on, you kind of end up adjusting very little sometimes, unless you are the person who's stuck this note on the back of the chair.
There's a training issue, isn't there? It's not that the chair is too adjustable. It's that the user hasn't been trained how to adjust the chair.
Possibly.
And the more, I adjust my chair regularly. Some days I'll be fatter. Some days I'll be thinner. Some days I'll be taller. Some days I'll be shorter, you know, whether it's the end of the day or the beginning of the day. Sometimes I'll be tired. Sometimes I'll be full of energy and I'll use a perching stool. It's adjusting your environment makes a lot of sense. As an example, right now, as we record this, I'm standing up using a standing desk. When I'm ready to do some typing, I'll lower the desk and I'll sit and I'll do some typing. And then if I'm doing that for too long, I'll take a break and do some typing standing up. And it's all about getting that movement in as much as it is having the right environment. So if you've got a chair in an office that says, do not touch, this is my chair, and stay away from it, it's because that person has got in their head this amazing setup that they think has to be perfect. And if anybody messes with it, they'll never get it back. A bit like your car chair. Oh my gosh, someone's moved my car seat and I'll never get it back. All you need is training how to adjust it. Yeah.
And the other thing you mentioned, desk.
I've ranted, Mike. I heard there was ranting on your show.
Yeah, ranting is fine. Usually I'm the one that rants.
But yeah,
you're a guest. We have to be nice to you. You're very welcome to rant. It's absolutely no problem. But so let me ask you, and you can rant about this if you like.
Fantastic.
A standard desk. What's the height of a standard desk? Is it 72 centimeters or 74 centimeters? Something like 72, I think.
Yeah, it varies. I sort of say it's 73 on average, just to go for a sort of average.
Right.
Depends. Yeah.
And so what always amazes me is that whether you are 6'6" or, you know, 5'2", and your first day in the office, you're given your desk and that's the height, whatever. And yeah, it just seems to be slightly bonkers to me.
It's all about ergonomics, is all about heights. If you can get everything generally at the right height, you generally solve the problems. Everybody's a different height. We have, you know, people are 5 foot, people are 6'6". How on earth is one office desk going to suit those people? It's just bonkers.
Yeah.
So we need to build in adjustability or variance. You need to have three different types of desk in your workplace,
right?
Particularly if there's a hot desk environment. You can't make that 6'6" person work at the same desk as that 5 foot person and have both of them be comfortable.
No, it's not possible. Well, so I mean, you said you've got a desk that goes up and down. So have I. You know, I like desks that go up and down.
Yeah.
I quite often stand at my desk and all the rest of it. So yeah, being able to change heights is very good.
It's nouveau riche, Mike. Having your own adjustable desk is nouveau riche. It's the new way forwards, and I can't help but show it off to everybody because it makes my life better.
Isn't that long ago that having a desk that changed height was kind of looked upon as witchcraft?
Yeah.
So I think we are making progress.
Yeah, I'm glad. We are making a lot of progress, and a lot of companies are putting a lot of thought and a lot of effort into how can they look after their staff, but not all. And no. The sort of companies who are paying near minimum wage and they just don't want to spend the money on looking after their staff ergonomically are doing themselves a disservice because they're not getting the same productivity out of those staff.
You know, well, the most important thing very often that a company has is the people that work for it. So, you know.
Yeah, it's the most expensive item, isn't it?
Yeah. Without them, they're just, you know, a few desks and a few chairs, which.
Yeah. Unless you're a furniture salesroom, in which case you've probably got the right setup.
Yes. Well, that's another story. That's a whole other topic. Let me ask you, and this is probably an impossible question, but I'll ask it anyway as to kind of finish it, to finish off. Is there a most common desk issue that you come across? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, okay. So the most common desk issue is the height of the screen. A lot of people are working on laptops and they assume because it's a portable computer, it's safe to use just on the desk. And it's not, because you have to pull down and you have to crane down to see your laptop screen. A lot of monitors aren't adjusted to the user, or they're not adjustable. So the simplest thing that you can do to improve your ergonomics is to get the top of your monitor up to the same height as your eyes. And right, you can do that I always recommend Jamie Oliver cookbooks, because that's what, you know, everybody's got dozens of Jamie Oliver cookbooks and they're great for raising your screen. If your screen is too low for you, raise it up. If your screen is too high for you, you need to raise yourself up. And right, in doing so, that might mean you need a footrest or something to support your feet while you're sitting.
Okay,
but, you know, vision's our primary sense and posture is a function of vision and reach. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Well, my computer, as we speak, is on a couple of wooden blocks. So I feel a little smug now. I'm doing the right thing.
Gold star, Mike. Gold star.
Right. Look, James, if people are listening to this and thinking, yeah, you know what? I think I could do with a bit of help from James, either with Alexander technique or help with ergonomics in the office, that kind of thing. How can they get hold of you or find more information?
Thanks, Mike. My primary website is posturestars.com. That's www.posturestars.com. And that's where I help companies and individuals to sort out their ergonomic and their pain issues. And then I have a secondary website called alexanderplus.com. That's www.alexanderplus.com. where I do Zoom for Alexander Technique, and I also where we arrange my local Alexander Technique sessions. And I live in Greater Manchester in the northwest of England. People travel to see me from as far afield as Liverpool and down into Derbyshire and up into the north as well. So I love meeting new people. If anybody wants to try an Alexander Technique session out, I'd be delighted to have an introductory session with you and show you what it's all about. And if you're a company and you know your staff are sitting badly and you know there's stuff that you could improve about it, or you have staff who might be going off with sickness or illness, which is very expensive, I can help with that as well. And I really enjoy going into companies' workplaces and or Zooming their staff to make their life a lot less painful and a lot more productive. All right. That's my plug, Mike.
Excellent. No, good plug. Thank you very much indeed for chatting for a few minutes, James. It's much appreciated. So many thanks.
Thanks for having me. It's been loads of fun. Cheerio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer. Part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, I'm up on the top of the Duomo. Climbed up over 400 stairs, the last lot in between two shells of the dome. And just to come out the top, it's beautiful sunshine. I can see there's an aeroplane landing at Florence Airport, which is currently lower than us. The aeroplane's lower than us. In fact, everything is lower than us up here, I think, pretty much. A fabulous view of the city. Great view of the tower of the Duomo as opposed to the dome. We can see people up the tower. That looks like quite fun as well.
Okay, so I mentioned I was going to tell you a bit about my holiday. We went to Italy, we visited Tuscany, including Florence, where we scaled the Duomo. I learned I need to get a little bit fitter. You can tell from me being so out of breath at the top on that little clip. We'll return to the city centre of Florence experience, but I just want to mention some other stuff. First, okay, so I'm a civil engineer from a past life, or I was a civil engineer in a past life. I don't practice now, but I can't help but notice some things to do with infrastructure when I travel. So apologies for that, maybe, but bear with me. We left from Stansted Airport, which was just like crowded and chaotic and pretty much horrible. We landed at Turin, which was wonderful. Admittedly, it's a smaller city, but Turin Airport was just lovely. The roads were great. Picking up the hire car was absolutely no problem. As you heard, we went to Florence. And I must admit, I was kind of dreading driving to Florence. My thought was that it's kind of crazy and chaotic and Italian drivers are a bit crazy. But that wasn't the case at all. There was a fantastic park and ride just on the outskirts of Florence. The tram into the centre cost €1.50 each. So it was €6 for the whole family to get into the centre of Florence from the park and ride. The tram from the park and ride was clean and air conditioned. And every 6 to 8 minutes, it was just wonderful. Parking for all day cost €8. So as a result of it being sensibly priced and comfortable to use, people actually do use it. I really couldn't help thinking that we could do with a bit of that in London in some similar ways. Admittedly, London is a larger city, but you know, there's nothing like that at all. Then when we got home after a couple of weeks in Italy, we landed at Gatwick, and then the train from Gatwick to St Albans, where we live for the family, was £51. You know, that's not €6 to the centre of town. Admittedly, the journey was a little bit further, but £51 to get home. I thought, yeah, welcome home, back to the UK. Anyway, I do like where I live, but I certainly enjoyed my holiday in Italy. So, and I do like Florence. So let's get back to Florence after the Duomo trip. Okay, I've come down from the Duomo. It was quite a hike up, but it was wonderful. And now we're sitting down at a cafe, listening to a gentleman singing a little bit of opera, and we're about to have a little drinky. So all is good. People watching is something I really like to do. I guess really it's just been kind of nosy, and I like to do it particularly when I go on holiday. And while I was sitting close to the Duomo, I noticed a couple of interesting people. So I went over for a chat. Good, right. So I'm just by the Duomo in Florence as part of my holiday. And I've got to say, it's a fantastic place. I was sitting down eating an ice cream, and then I saw two really fascinating people. And they came on bicycles, and they were picked up a pigeon. They had one pigeon with them in a backpack, and they picked up another pigeon. So I had to come over and say hello. So guys, hi, please introduce yourselves.
Hello, I am Memo. She's my wife.
It's Birge.
Fascinating to meet you both. So please, can you just tell me what you're doing and why you have like one pigeon in a box, and you're looking after, or seem to be looking after, other pigeons?
So what are we doing? We are we're helping pigeons. We are going out when we can with our bicycles, and sometimes we take our little guy here, who is also a pigeon. We call him Mavi, and we are looking.
And you say Mavi had a broken wing, and you helped him.
Mavi had a broken wing. Yes, he appeared in front of us one evening when
here
he was supposed
Florence.
To be here in Florence, when he was supposed to be sleeping. And we saw, and it was like, wow, what's wrong with this guy in this hour, like almost midnight? And we picked him up, went home, took it to the vet, and then apparently it had a broken wing, can't fly again. So we adopted him. I hope he has a happy life.
Looks fine to me. He looks pretty happy.
And he has his wife.
Yeah, the wife is like a toy pigeon.
Yes.
Just for company.
Toy pigeon.
But he doesn't know.
Okay.
Anyway, so, you know, we are...
So what started your interest in wanting to look after pigeons around the Duomo in Florence?
Well, we were, you know, like under lockdown during COVID times. And there's a pair of pigeons that started coming to our windowsill, and we started giving them food. And, you know, we started observing them because we had nothing else to do. So we started to study a little bit, we started to read a little bit, and then all of a sudden we realized that they're not like rats with wings that many people...
Lots of people say that, don't they?
Yeah, say that, exactly. Yeah. And that's a very misunderstood reality, because they're in fact, you know, like quite
domestic animals.
Domestic animals, yeah. And like they're quite clean.
So can you tell different ones apart when you come here? Do you recognize different pigeons ever?
Well, these are feral pigeons, you know, like these are once upon a time domesticated and then escaped, and then they have multiplied among themselves, different breeds, different colors, and all of a sudden we have this mess here because, you know, we are not, as humans, not that clean. We throw our garbage away, we don't contain them so good, and then, you know...
The human hair is the worst thing ever.
So why is that? What's the problem with the human hair?
Because these animals, like, to find food, they're walking on the streets, and, like, they have a tendency to, how do you say...
Turn around themselves.
Turn around themselves.
Yes.
And... Just
it's like the classic sort of pigeon strut. They're always turning around and round, aren't they?
And then when there's some like human hair on the ground, they just take it, and like in like 10 seconds that they can strangle okay. their yeah
entangle both their feet
both yeah, their exactly. feet and sure. in time it becomes gangrene, you say, no?
Exactly. So
gangrenous, it cuts yeah. the blood flow to the foot and becomes gangrenous.
They lost suffering. Their fingers or even whole feet. So if we can catch one in an early stage, it's great. We clean it and then he will never have like problems regarding that thing again.
Okay.
But sometimes...
Unless, of course, catches another one.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
So this is fantastic. So do other people care for the pigeons here, or is this kind of your thing?
Unfortunately, not really. You know, like it's you know, where we come from originally, which is Istanbul, Turkey, pigeons are a little bit more like, you know,
loved.
Yes, exactly. I don't want to say sacred because they're not, but they're more loved.
Okay.
They're more respected. But here, it's appalling to see many locals that are so convinced these are, you know, like animals that brings sickness, illness,
and
you know,
die.
Yeah, they should die, and they should be,
right.
they should be collected and, you know, euthanized, and a lot of people think like that. So
they're not generally people here are not so kind to the pigeons.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Okay.
And then just because like when we see one. In pain, in need of help, we know that we are his only chance.
Probably.
Okay.
So how can you turn around and go back and, you know, not help it? You know, it's not fair. You know, like I can't sleep like that at night. You know, knowing that this poor guy here is suffering, and just a simple kind of, you know, gesture. You just, you know, lure it with food and you take it. There's many YouTube videos on this, you know, how to catch a pigeon, how to help a pigeon, how to, you know, unstring strung feet, pigeon feet. You know, you just take it, help it, and just you release it. It's just that simple. It's just that kindness.
How lovely. I'm really glad I met you. So thank you very much for
thank you for
letting
paying
me know
attention.
What you
did. That's something.
You're extremely welcome. Absolute pleasure to meet you both.
Yeah, you
pleasure,
too.
Pleasure is ours. Thank you very much.
So you never know who you're going to meet in the centre of Florence. In fact, I forgot to say, my children saw a fellow student from their old school in the queue to go up the Duomo. So, Florence, a wonderful place. Thank you to my guests on this week's show. They were James Crow, posture expert, and of course, Mimo and Berger, the pigeon helpers in Florence. Thank you for listening, and a special thanks to the show sponsor, AlgoCells, who bring regenerative orthopedic medicine to the UK. See their website. It's algocells.com for details. If you or a loved one are in pain, do have a look. And then, of course, thank you also to you for listening.
That was the Relax Back UK show with me, Mike Dill. Thank you for listening, and please do join us again next time.